Welcome everyone for the weekly English Museum discussion in Tuesday. We have 1 hour time for the discussion. And we are in Paramattaka Sutta as regular participants already know. Before going to the Sutta, if there are any interview reports or any other comments or any other topics, we'll take a few minutes. And then we wish to go to the today's topic. So if there are any comments, please take your time on behalf of this discussion, please.
Avasarai Bhante, we have not received any reports for this session.
Sadhu, sadhu, anumodami. Anumoditabbang, kamami kamitabbang. Kamami kamitabbang. Ari, I can't hear you. Hayyen katakaran.
We didn't receive any report for today's session, Bhante.
So we can go directly into the Paramattaka Sutta. Last time we went to, I think, stanza number 5 or something like that.
So I'll just go back over stanza 4 again, and so that we can lead into stanza 5. Nor should one construct any view in the world by means of knowledge or good behavior and observances. One should not take oneself as equal or think of oneself as inferior or superior. Having abandoned what is taken up, not clinging, one does not create a dependency even on knowledge. Not taking sides amongst those who are divided, one does not fall back on any view at all. So this is very, very challenging because this gets down to this conceit as the basis of... In this whole chapter, there's a recurring theme that the craving is craving for things that we want and then also craving for views. So this idea about views and the underlining... role that views play in people's lives is critical and down to a fundamental sort of aspect of what the Buddha calls the house builder, this sense of identity. And fundamental to this sense of identity is how we rate each other, one another, when we meet each other. So we view each other as superior, as inferior, or as being the same. So this this division or this emphasis on conceit is, I think, particularly unique to Buddhism, and its importance and its relevance to spiritual growth and development is, no better highlighted than here in Buddhism. So superiority can manifest in many ways. For instance, if you're the older brother or sister, you can view yourself as superior in some ways to your younger brother or younger sister. Or you can view yourself as inferior to your parents in some way or to your elders. Or you may view yourself as the same, like we are all the same clan, we're the same family, we're the same nation, we're the same color, we're the same language. And there's so many ways that we can view ourselves as being the same. But what is actually quite fundamental and unique to the experience of existence is that everybody is, in fact, individual. So I was reminded even recently I was reading where scientists were using Instagram photographs of zebras to identify different zebras. So when people would go into a national park, they would just, be going around in the tour buses or in the vehicles and taking photographs of zebras. But nowadays, with artificial intelligence, we can pick out that each, the barcoding on the zebras as unique. So we can have unique identification of these animals, and they could track the animals just based on scraping the photographs off of Instagram. Like that on such and such a day, the animals were together in this group, in this area, in this place. And on another day, they were somewhere else. And they could correlate this to the behavior of the zebras. So to you and me, maybe we look at a zebra and we think they're all the same. But these days with these you know, with these cameras and systems, they can pick out the unique characteristics of each animal. And, you know, the same with whales, the same with spotted leopards, you know, you name it, they're individual and unique. To our eye, they may look the same, but to someone else, to these expert systems, they're unique and individual. So what we deny when we look at somebody who is unique and we say you're all the same is we deny their individuality, and this is a conceitedness that is arising. And it is a conceitedness that's very rich in ignorance, I would say, in moha. Whereas if somebody views one as inferior or superior, you can see that these are related to other traits like anger or aversion or like or dislike. So maybe if I view somebody as superior, I might have a liking for them in some ways, but I'm still not seeing them as they really are. I'm still not seeing the individual sides to them when I focus on the superior or inferior nature of them. So when we become enlightened, we see people as individuals. We see them as they are, as they really are. So this is a fundamental. You know, this is really getting down to the real physics of how existence works, that everybody is individual, and yet we instantly categorize people as superior, inferior, or the same as, or not the same as the out-group, in-group, out-group. And associated with these thoughts or these perceptions of someone as superior, inferior, or the same is our emotions, such as shame. So shame would be a constructed value, or shame would be these are our beliefs, these are our views, these are our customs, these are our traditions, this is the way we do things. We don't do things in that way. And if you do things in that way, then you're out-group. This comes back to this idea of we're all the same. And it's very important for the survival of a person that they fit in with their group, with their family, within their society. If they're an outcast, if they're an outgroup, then their survival is very much in doubt. It becomes very precarious. They don't have security. They don't have safety. So the emotional systems that we build around this are particularly shame. Shame is where there are particularly ways of doing things within a group of people that are like I say, practices, rituals, values, language, accent, all sorts of things that if we don't exactly fit into it or come close to this ideal of being the same as, then we feel excluded. And with this exclusion is, like I said, a great threat to our existence. So our mechanism around such a great overwhelming existential threat is that we drop. So with dropping means like our shoulders drop, maybe our even our breathing or our heart can stop and we just fall down and faint, or something like that. So, because this is such a great existential threat that we can't run away or we can't fight it. So this is associated with shame and with the emotions of shame. And in different cultures, they use different sort of words. Like in Asia, they will often call it face, to lose face or status. Or so you can see why or how certain people in groups, they put so much effort into cultivating face, cultivating status. You know who I am. And this, you know, with this, you know who I am, goes so many things. Oh, you know, I went to this school. I live in this neighborhood. These are my family members. These are my connections. You know who I am. So this is kind of like a statement of power or authority or of status. And supposing you dismiss it and you kind of go, I don't know that school. I don't know that cricket team or whoever you associate with. I don't identify with those things. Then if that's a kind of an alien force attacking your identity, then you may experience a shame, and that shame may convert into anger or fear. So these are very basic emotions of survival and of protection, and they exist for a good purpose and a reason as such. They are very protective and very helpful to our existence. So if we can learn to cognize and recognize within ourselves these mechanisms of the arising of shame and the associated thought around it, oh, I am inferior to this person, I am superior to this person, I am the same as this person. If we can recognize these thoughts or these identities or these views, then we start to what I call drain the swamp. We start to have some manageability over our mechanisms around shame and how shame is connected to fear and anger. So that becomes a very helpful way of managing our underlining, you could say, protective emotional behaviors. So, for instance, recently somebody was asking me about they had a lot of anger in their life, and they just didn't know how to not be angry. And I told them that they needed to what they call drain the swamp, which was to help and work on removing the sort of flooding that happens before they actually feel angry. And this flooding that they feel before anger is a lot to do with status, a lot to do with their identity. Am I inferior? Am I superior? Or am I the same as? And, you know, this person, when they were threatened across any of these views of same as, superior or inferior, they would respond with anger. So the in a way, anger was a consequence. It was downstream. It was the result of being flooded by these feelings of shame, and flooded by these views. I am equal. I am superior. I am inferior to this other person. So without draining this swamp of views of conceit, without getting a handle on shame, then this person will always react with anger. And for somebody else, it could be with fear. You know, somebody like could be chronically anxious, chronically unable to such face the world or go out or be very controlling around their environment. You know, so it can manifest in different ways. It sort of flows downstream from this more original source. But this source of all these different protective emotions is back into this mana, into this conceit. And to learn to recognize the modes, the ways, the means of conceitedness in our life, what is triggering for us around conceit is a great power. And because it can become very informative. So I must say in my own life, I've only recently, you know, in my own life, got a handle in some ways, and it's something that I continue to master in my life, how people shame me, how people put me down, how people, you know, put me up and set me up for a downfall in some ways. So it's become very, very interesting. So I try to encourage people to learn to understand these modes of conceit in their life. And it's a great victory. It's a great victory to have manageability over conceitedness in our life. And in a way, then conceit turns from being a self-inflicted injury to very informative. So, for instance, if somebody appears very friendly, but are actually, you know, they seem to be flattering me, but then in reality, they're just also trying to put me down. All of that dynamic I would have missed in the past. You know, I would have just seen somebody superficially as friendly and nice and kind, And I would have been charmed by that. And I wouldn't have seen the underlining, say, anger or resentment in that person and how they actually didn't have my best intention at heart. So it has made my experience of life much more rich and much more nuanced. And I'm much more informed about my own experience in the world, my own expectations, my own views, and then the views and expectations of other people. And it becomes a more dynamic dance. It's not black and white. So my relationships with other people are much more like a rainbow. So there's bitter and there's sweet and there's nice and there's not nice and there's, you know, you need to do it this way. This is our way. We don't do it that way. And all of these shaming experiences and feelings arise. And then they inform me like a whisper that this is the dynamic that's going on and I need to be careful and I need to, as it were, drain this swamp. Or like at the moment we're in monsoon here, I need to be careful of the flooding paddy fields around my mind because I will get swamped. I will get overwhelmed by my own lack of management over my own emotions, especially these profound emotions like shame. So this is just on that number four, and then having abandoned and not taking up, not clinging, not one does not create a dependency even on knowledge. So here, you know, of course, within Sri Lankan society, knowledge, learning, studies are very important, and to be not dependent even on knowledge is a great freedom. So we're not clinging and we're not creating a dependency through this way. We can be self-reliant and we can be informed by the information that is arising in our own mind in any moment. Namely, like, what is the real experience? Is this person really friendly and kind or is this person undermining me? Not taking sides amongst those who are divided, one does not fall back on any view at all. So these days, of course, divisiveness is the coin of the realm in politics. You are blue or you are red, and everybody thinks that if they have an opinion, if they have a polarized view about the world, that this is somehow knowledge, or and this is knowing, and this is being part of a tribe. But here, the Buddha is telling us to not be divisive, to not be divided, to not fall back on any view at all. Like, he's not saying that one shouldn't have a view, because in the Eightfold Noble Path, of course, there's right view. So if we can only cultivate and develop and understand and know what right view is through direct experience and through knowing for ourselves that something is really true. And this isn't falling back on a view then at that stage. That's where the reality and the view are the same. But for most other people, they're just dumbly applying a kind of a model of the world onto the world. And there's a discrepancy between that reality and the model of the world or the view. And that due to that discrepancy, due to that not being in reality, not seeing the world as it really is, then they argue with other people. So if you remember, the origin story of this sutta was about the elephant. And all the blind men who were inspecting the elephant and coming to an expert opinion about an elephant is like a brush, or an elephant is like the trunk of a tree, or an elephant is like the side of a wall, or an elephant is like a hard, you know, spear, and so on. Whereas, say, somebody else could who had eyes, they could see that an elephant was, you know, a very different kind of being than like a hard spear or a brush. So here we can see that it's actually very, very difficult to have a full view or a full sight of what something is. So these days with like global problems as such, global challenges like climate change, you know, everybody has an opinion and everybody thinks that they know what the weather is and what temperature is, what rain is, but we don't really have, it's extremely difficult for any of us to have a complete picture of even one phenomena like climate change, it's extremely difficult. So therefore, we rely on shorthand understandings like this is my view and that's that person's view and here they are in opposition and this is what they call dialectic thinking. I'm on this side, you're on that side, let's debate about it. And it really doesn't come to any total view about things. And in reality, as the Buddha was saying here, that we need to not take sides amongst those who are divided. One does not fall back on any view at all. So this has maybe been a bit long, so I'll turn it back over to Mahatero to hear what he has to say about these two verses.
So far we have gone to the fourth and fifth. Yeah. This thing, I will just present the fourth and fifth stanzas and the textural meaning. Yeah. Fourth is Dittimpi lokasming na kappayaya Jnanenava thilavatena vachapi Samoti attana manupaneya Heenona manyeta visesa vapi. E mahana, that particular monk, Hudek drushti kshutrema matu noganneve. He is not taken by the theoretical knowledge or by his view. He is not taken this as a yardstick. Yali lokhe nupan drushtyeda samapatyadinge o silavutyan ho nupadavanneya. So he is not try to get unreasoned views and highest samadhi jnanas or wrong sila observations. Observation also he is not craving for. Tavada jatyadi vastu karna kotakena mama sadrushemi. No, equally, he is not comparing others with they are equal with me by their birth, their properties, their abilities like. So he's not comparing it as the equal also, not inferiority, not with superiority. So it's a like kind of a total presentation, but there is no clue, there is no direction. So this is almost like a charter for free thinking. Kalakarama Sutta, Mukadda, Kala, that's a very famous sutta. Is Kalama Sutta. Kalama Sutta. So there, Buddha is not a spiritual master. He is giving a charter for free thinking. And Buddhists, they are not happy. But Buddhists wanted to have a set of rules and all the kind of restrictions and kind of thing. So Kalama Sutta, two halves. First half, destroy everything. Destroy all the views and kind of. But the second half, directly pinpointing. And after finishing, after cleaning the ground, he is planning, presenting the plan. But Paramatta Sutta, what we are talking about, is giving another seconding about the Kalama Sutta and talk about views. But the first example taken is, not in the Sutta, but the commentary says, king is setting a blind people to touch the elephant in different parts and ask them to give explanation. And then the king can understand what the kind of partial or reductionist kind of explanation, and they are telling, I am talking with direct touch. Don't try to convince me elephant is like a trunk, or elephant like a rock, or elephant is like a winnowing fan, or like a brush. So ultimately, you can say they can't see the total picture, no system approach. So science is killing. Science is always reductionist, and they lost moral shame and the moral fear, and they are sensitive to the climate, and sensitive to the human emotions, and now after 200 years they slowly comes to know, because four generations they lost moral shame and moral fear, and continuously erosion of the climatic situation, and understanding others' feelings. But they are going to do everything with the artificial intelligence and the gadgets and kind of thing. So family connection is gone. All the children are single-parent children. And if they're living in a family, it is appear like the aboriginals like. Social people live in their own room with the cell phone and his own television and his own connection. Everything is coming from the orders and nothing. No family affairs. So now they are understanding how important that kind of a system approach, how important the seeing the overall picture, I call macro climate. So in meditation, the Buddha says, you sit and first you isolate yourself, go to a forest, sit under a tree and in a place where only people are not concerned about the sensuous pleasure. And then try to take into the exactly in the present moment. But before going to that, he says how to sit, how to configure your body and the atmosphere, and then go deep down into the present moment awareness and then compare it with the outside. The person sitting next to you, person, I myself, before coming into the meditation center and after going. So likewise, this internal-external relationship, past and the future relationships, they're happening, of course, in a deductive way. And otherwise, individually, you can't go to Nibbana. It always must be related with Ajjata Bahidda, internal-external relationship. So monks' life, many forest monks, they think they must be going to a cage or cave and they can enlighten. But they don't have common sense. But those who have common sense don't have solitude. They don't have time. So you have to balance them, internal-external relationship. So therefore the Buddha, analyzing the teaching of the Buddha, it says the middle-class people are the best. They have common sense. They have to earn something. They have to earn freedom. They have to earn solitude and use it for meditation. But don't forget about the rest of the world. The rich people can't do it. Very poor people can't do it. So you have to be in the middle class. That means economy is distributed evenly, so people better off. The rich people don't do it. Poor people can't do it. So middle class people have some kind of. So therefore, Buddha came from the rich class family, kingly family, but his teaching is so precise. And basically this Paramattha Sutta is talking about ditthi, about the views. And views are colored by conceit. Conceit, the God created Dhamma, God created the religious, this is ancestral guilt. The guilt of the Adam and Eva. And they destroy, violate the God's rules and they are in the ancestral guilt. But in Buddhism, we can't translate the term guilt into singular. We don't have a guilt. We have inferiority complex, superiority complex and equal complex because we believe the karma and karma theory, not the ancestral guilt. So therefore, whatever the way the God, Dhamma, the deism, if you are going to implant here, it won't happen. If someone is accepting, that means he is mentally imbalanced. Because India and Sri Lanka, they consider that what you are reaping is what you planted, not the God. So therefore, that kind of a complexity, I am taking away from the main theme. Main theme is, if you are touching only one part, and if you are talking with your direct experience, you have to understand you are in a reductionism. But overall, you have to see, there's another view called system approach. So that is why the Buddha says that if a blind person come, you can give the food, lodgings and clothings and all the kind of thing. But the best thing is to remove his blindness. Then he is much, much better than giving all the four requisites. So therefore, just give him a chance. Of course, you must have something to eat and something to wear and kind of thing. But the main thing is you have to remove the blind. And Tanna Mana Ditti is the main thing. Usually the Sutta Nipata is talking about that a proliferating mental proliferation based basically on the conceit view and the desire. The conceit is the one underlining tendency because it is removed only in Uddambhagya Sangyojana, only at the Arahant level. But the Ditti, even at the Sotapanna level, you are free from ditthi. Ditthi is creating so much of troubles. But easiest thing is to remove. I mean, from the four noble people, sotapanna ditthi gone. And sakada anagami tanha gone. Conceit, mana, is at the arahant level. So therefore, you have to understand we all are with this contagious disease. It's a rash. It's a corona. We all have that. So therefore, we are in the madha pamada. We have conceit and we are delayed. Because we look at anything through with the conceit and through wrong views. But when you are meditating and discussing each other, we can criticize each other and we can say, you are with that view, the other person will tell, we have to accept it. Not completely granted, but see, yes, other person can see. But then I have to help him and say, hey darling, you also have this kind of a thing. So this is what we call the brotherhood. And this is what we call the interviews. And Upandita Sayadaw is the best I see in the world, teaching you how to express yourself. And the other person, you believe, you give it to someone practicing, co-practitioner, also senior person, and he says, hey darling, when I'm sitting, I feel like that. When I'm walking, I feel like that. When I'm eating like that, what do you say? So he will say, you are mad. You have not got the basic instruction. You are doing something artificial. You just be. So that kind of interviews, after 18 months only, I got the basic book. He has given a small talk on clearing the path, paving the path. And I translated it, and it was a huge difference for the Sri Lankan community how to give an interview report. So each and every Tripitaka book, they have quoted one particular sutta of the Buddha, Bharanduka Sutta. Each of page is having this one. This is Anguttara Nikaya. Tikanipata, Tathagata Pavejito Bhikkave, Dhamma Vinayo, Vivato Virochati, Na Patichano. The teaching of the Buddha will be bright whenever you exposed. When you hide it, it will never be brighter or enlightened. So therefore, our brotherhood is to expose ourselves, to express ourselves. And communication-wise, we are deaf, we are blind. We can't hear. Even though we are in a technological age, we are not talking. We are just showing. Show off. Role play. We are not friends. Because we are private and confidential. So much so you have conceit. You have the guilt. You have the ancestral guilt. So in my life, I try my best on behalf of the monkhood, on behalf of meditation, just tell, I don't like you. Can't help. So sometimes he may be happy. So I sometimes say, I am happy with you, okay. I can deal with you. No, unconditionally, I can be with you. So then I am so relaxed. And when I become a chief monk and kind of thing, I get an authoritative kind of a kind that I don't like. But whenever someone having, so I can associate, I am associating a lot of children. Easily I can understand the child will refuse me or accept me. So then I have to adjust. Our Sudhu Hamdra was there in Kaduvela. Three children, they have see him like a devil. Whenever he is coming, they are running. Sudhu Hamaduru. I don't know. But at the beginning, they were at the distance with me. Later, I put into the boat and give a boat ride. And then now, they are coming dancing to me. So, understanding with them. Children, earlier, our Loko Hamaduru told, don't associate children. Because it is child abuse and the sexual feeling can come. So, I told them, we are prohibited to behave with the children, and to a certain extent we can do in the Satipasala, and they are, I have to be like a beginner. I have to be below children. So there I find my corona will never happen to me. I'm so happy. I'm so hilarious and active. So many people doubt whether I am a monk or not. But I can't satisfy them. I have to maintain my health, my mentality, and that is what I spent for 32 years. So therefore, I may be touching the elephant's one part. Sure, I know, because my hobby is vipassana. So I avoid samatha section. But I have to keep some kind of thing. I have to accept the grammar, languages, because that is none of my business. I need just to go there and sit. But I am learning now, Samatha. I am learning languages and kind of thing. How much, even though I am old, how can I accommodate them? That is like a challenge. Because I know I am very partial. We are born with this tunnel vision. So we have to have the wider this thing. And whenever ditti go on, sakkaya ditti in the silabbata and the silabbata paramasa in the sotapanna, so released. You can see your own directed dispositions, your own tendencies and behaviorists with others. They will show you in a silent sermon, I like you, I don't like you. So Godwin reduced it to liking and disliking. Each and every visual thing, each and every sound, whenever interact with us, it is going to black and white, two baskets, liking, disliking. So soon you see, you lose the value of the thing you see. Instead, you can see how my mind is artificially labeling them. I think it is, earlier I thought the visual things are basically with the liking and disliking. No, liking and disliking, what you impose upon that. Visual things are visual things. And specifically for towards the girls. So when we are young, we are always happy to see there are different behaviors and kind of thing. And I was observing and I was succumbed to that situation. I found very difficult to tackle. I told Venerable Dhammika Bhante, I'm such a sexual person. No, nothing to worry because I am also the same. That is young age. If it is not there only, you have to be worried. So it won't give an answer. Because so much of feelings are happening. Parakram Fernando, I told, I have so much a sex feeling. Then I told, what is wrong with it? Your age is 26. And a university candidate, undergraduate. So, what is wrong? So, I thought they are going to pacify me. I thought there will be a solid answer. There is no solid answer. But now I am reaching 70. So, I can see the internal expression, internal way I am tackling with the so-called feminism and the sexual behavior of the young children, and kind of they are becoming faded off. So my dopamine hormones in the brain is reduced now. So very difficult to stir me, very difficult to stimulate me. So I artificially doing it, associating and see what is happening. No, it is a kind of evolution. And that can be monitored, soon you see something if you can understand your liking and disliking. So it is a very deep restraint, not like a sila restraint, samadhi restraint, panya restraint. Of course it is come under the panya restraint. Whatever you interact with, you impose liking and disliking. And soon you see it, how I pollute it, the realistic, intrinsic value of that particular thing is reducing. Always reducing. Always reducing. So you are getting a distance from the physical world. You understand you are the one imposing, you are the one pouring, you are liking and disliking. That is, you can relate with the conceit, you can relate with your view, you can relate with your desire, but they are not three things then. All are the same. Then only it have the three functional, instrumental, different things, views, conceit, and the desire. They all work as a one. So imagine a young boy or young girl, how to escape? Very difficult. Very difficult. Therefore, philosophical analysis is okay. I mean, psychologically, we have to analyze it. But still, we are succumbed to the situation. So you have to keep on fighting, till you raise the nose. But still you can't compare it with the others because you are not the same the other. But when you come up to Aryan levels, noble level, you can see there's a path. There's a path. And Buddha is trying his best. So in Satipasala, we have two different drastic two views. One, some people says, don't teach satya, don't teach mindfulness, practice. Others says, practice is not enough, you have to teach. So now, today also we are going to have a meeting. And what is Satipatthana, our view? Are we going to teach in a classroom? Or are we going to do practical? So last Saturday meeting I had in the Imadur, and some people says, at the beginning, completely practical. While you keep on doing, you have to tell the theory behind. Then you become Buddhist. Then others will criticize you. So you can understand, because Jnanaponika is giving the power of mindfulness fairly in a non-religious way, it analyzing, and it's presented in such a way that is the only way addressed to me. Not Buddhism. These books I never associated. I associate the power of mindfulness because it is scientifically analyzing and feel like doing. So that is the way the present day 21st century learning skills, social emotional learning, and psychiatrically, psychologically, how mindfulness is helping you, as you mentioned, with the climatic changes and the understanding emotions and dealing with the luxuries and other utensils, the mindfulness is giving a kind of a evolution. And last interview, he mentioned a person interviewing, he told mind and the mindfulness kind of thing. I just wanted to tell you, mindfulness is a progeny of the mind. Mindfulness is a chetasika of the chitta. But that chetasika can control the chitta. The progeny can control the genesis. So it's a kind of a revolution. So it is happening through the Tannamana Ditti. So this sutta is dealing it a very, very abstract way. Not related to the elephant now. Elephant is gone. That example is not in the sutta. But it's very good to understand the complexity of the situation. Don't arrive at any formula. Don't arrive at any conclusion. You keep on practicing, and then you can see your evolution of your formula, the frame, and that is what we call choiceless awareness, and evilly suspended attention. Keep on practice. Anything from America?
It makes a lot of sense when you explain it, Swaminansa, so I feel like I can't say anything else.
Yeah. So that means we are very humble, we are beginner's mind. Keep on practicing till the death. No profession. We are not professing someone. We are telling, please let us know. And we are also happy. We look whether you are conceited or you are with the views or with your desire. But I can understand any person coming with ditti. I can understand any person coming with any minuous desirable desires or conceit. So that is my security. So always I keep relationship very freely and let my mind to understand the feelers. Is coming from the ditti or the view or from conceited idea or with exploiting me. I just give him a chance. Again and again, ultimately he succumbed to the situation because I have no malice. So Buddha gave these three tools for us to understand this is the source of mental proliferation. And whenever Jnananda's book on the concept and reality, so profoundly explaining it, how mental proliferation come and engulf us. You have to, earlier the better, if you can nip it at the bud level, okay, otherwise sorry. So we are already sorry situation, but we have a beacon light, we have the tunnel door, so we have to try, we have to strive. So we may proceed if there are no other presentation of ideas.
So the sixth one is, for one who has no wish here for either end, for various states of existence here or beyond, there are no places of residence at all grasped after deciding among teachings. So for one who has no wish here for either end, this reference to either end is referring to this relationship between the object and the subject. So when I see something, I see the object, but then I also forget that that there is the subject, the person viewing the object. And as Mahatero has just been mentioning, that object is constantly being colored by this superior, inferior, or equal view, like or dislike, for or against, up or down. So we try to see things as they really are, as an enlightened person. So they're not tied to either end. They have no wish for either end. In other words, they don't wish for the subject or the object. So they see this interaction in every sense arising at any of the six sense doors, seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, and touching. And they understand that I like or dislike this thing that I see, hear, smell, taste, touch, or think about. And then there a freedom starts to arise, because they don't have to jump on that object. And they realize that they have their own tendencies, they have their own likes and dislikes, and that this subjective experience is manipulating the whole experience of the object. So in this way, we don't wish here for either end, for various states of existence here or beyond. So the various states of existence here or beyond are existences, for instance, the human existence, the heavenly realms. We don't wish for those. We don't wish for the existences such as maybe I'm not a rich person and I wish to be rich, or I'm a rich person and I wish to have less troubles or some other things going on in my life. So this we people are full of this state of wishing for various states of existence here or beyond. So in this life, in future lives, in this present time, in future times, this like escapism, or this desire for different realms, or this desire for a state, any other state than here and now. So here we learn to embrace the here and now, to occupy the here and now, to show up for the here and now, to be a reliable witness of the here and now, rather than wanting to be in the past, wanting to be in the future, wanting to be in this state of existence, that state of existence, this status, that status, and so on. So that's a constant state of restlessness and agitation. In a different sutta, the Buddha described it as being like a mangy dog, where you have mange on your skin, and you seek the shade, you seek the coolness, you seek the humidity. Then you seek a dry patch. It's this mangy dog. The problem is the mange. It's not the environment or the situation. So there are no places of residence at all. There are no places of residence. This is again referring back to a deep teaching of the Buddha. The word Himalaya, as in the Himalayan mountains, is the roosting place of the clouds. Himal is a cloud, and Alaya is a roosting place, or where they hang out. So the clouds in India, they cluster over the Himalayas, and so this idea of roosting, of having a place, to have a place of residence, is profoundly important to people. So as a monk, to go into the homeless life is to not have a place of residence, to not more than just a place of residence is this idea of familiar, of roosting, of nesting. So I see it as particularly as people get older and older, they like that. This is my house, this is my room, this is my cup, this is where everything is. And it becomes ever-decreasing circles. They're not exploring or open or interested in the world. And I have to say, in the people, the older people that I've known, the oldest people, people who live into their 80s or 90s, they still hang on to that childlike nature and interest in the world. Whereas people who are more like roosters, roosting, they're not interested anymore. They just like things the way that everything is set up, and it's an ever decreasing circle. So their interest and attention, or that they see that the world is dynamic and changing around them, that this is not in their interest at all. They like a stability. They like that things don't change. They like things to be where they expect things to be. And they only accept views or opinions of that they like, and they reject the views and opinions that they don't like, and so on. So this is this tremendous tendency within all beings that that they want to find a residence. So there are no places of residence at all. This is quite a shocking statement, really, that ultimately there is no residence, and that everything we must let go of. And in the end, you know, when we die and we pass on, you know, we will leave everything behind except for our karma. So grasped after deciding amongst teachings. So this grasping is just where we align ourselves with some view or idea. And amongst all of the different views and ideas, we just grasp onto one view or idea and we hang on to it. So again, in the Dhamma, we explore the teachings of the Buddha. We don't even take what the Buddha says as, you know, as the law or as the rule. He presents to us the teachings, and we must discover these truths for ourselves. As Mahatera was just talking about, I mean, do you start teaching Satipatthana from a theoretical viewpoint? You know, the Buddha said this, this is the rule, this is the law, this is the way it is, you know, this is us, this is Buddhism, these are Sri Lankans, and, you know, we're in this club, and this is how we are, and this is how we behave, and here are the observances, and this is the sila, and this is the dana, and this is the bhavana, and this is our superior birthright, and, you know, I call it, you know, we're... Buddhism with a birth cert, you know, and you know, so people will look at somebody like me, who, you know, is not from a Buddhist country. I'm not like other Sri Lankans and so on. I'm white, and they'll say, "Well, obviously you have no idea about Buddhism, and let me explain it to you." So many times I get taught Buddhism by Sri Lankan Buddhists, who are birthright Buddhists. You know, their birth certificate makes them a Buddhist. And it can be quite tedious because they don't know the first thing about Buddhism at all. And so here, when the Buddha says grasped after deciding amongst teachings, you know, and especially I would remind people listening in from overseas, you can get very nationalistic about Buddhism. You know, you can get very caught up in your identity as a Sri Lankan, and you want to identify yourself in the world, or, you know, not feel like you're... being wiped out by being a migrant, for instance, and you're losing your identity, you're losing your culture, you're losing all these things. And instead, it can be a freedom from these things, and that we can learn to look at them fresh. And in my own development and path, as a, you know, I grew up in a Christian culture and community and family and so on, you know, I'm very grateful that I had that presence of mind to, you know, pay attention and listen to other people's views and perspectives. And I must say, as I deepen in the practice and the Dhamma, that these nationalist sentiments and identifications with this is my family, this is where I'm from, this is my residence, this is who I am, you know, all of that need to defend all of that kind of ideology or thinking or views is slowly being effaced, or slowly being removed, or the swamp is being drained around that. And it brings a great freedom. You know, I don't have to be some sort of ideal or ideology or something like that. And I can actually just be myself and accept myself for my strengths and my weaknesses. And that's a great freedom. So this freedom from a place of residence, like being Analeo or Analeo, Analea, that's Analia, is very a great freedom. To not have to roost, to not have to defend certain ideologies or identities and so forth, is a great freedom. And to be free from grasping after deciding amongst teachings, you know, I don't have to be, I don't have to tie myself to a teaching. Instead, my task is to use bhavana, to use insight, to use direct knowledge, direct touch, to cultivate a deep insight into the nature of the world, and then, you know, I can use teachings or views to if they help illuminate my position, but. Yeah, ultimately, it's that direct experience that is what matters.
What is the time like?
I
think it's about 35. So in this particular stanza, yassu bhayante panidhi dhanatti bhava bhavaya idava hurangva niveshanatassa nasantikechi dhammesu nichcheya samuggahitam. Main thing it is talking about no panidhi. Panidhi means any target, not result oriented. You do it for the sake of doing. So it is something appear like useless, meaningless according to the economic point of view. Political point of view, they are always gaining something. They have panidhi, they have a target. So panidhi. And the other thing is niveshana, entering into and roosting upon something. And the last thing is dittimpi. There is no use also. So that means when these things not available, religion can't live. Religious values are always with panidhi, with niveshana and ditti. So therefore Buddhism at the beginning appear like a ism. Appear like you have to have a nibbana as the aim. You must live in this and that and all the restraints. And you have to have a sammaditti, what you call. So when Dhammika told me in 1778, each ditti is michaditti. No ditti is the only ditti. So I never can't talk this kind of with my parents because they say you are in sammaditti, you are in a birthright with Buddhism. So you are in sammaditti, others are michaditti. You all are michaditti. Americans, Irish, all michaditti. Suddha fellows, no use. So I am working with Venerable Dhammika and he says, Ishditti is michaditti. So all the monks, they refuse me. So I kept it open. And Niveshana, I am with that clan. I am with that group. I am entering into that. I am going to get this membership, that membership. I decided I will never take a membership of any society. But still I became a monk. So this is a huge explanation I have to give. And the panidhi, I have to be so and so, or this status. So now in Sri Lanka, how many people claim they are Aryans, they are this and that, and so much of media, so much of social media, hahu. And not necessary to show off, whatever it may be, your behavior will show you, so they were not necessary to have panidhi. We live as a human being, we justify common sense. Not any other thing. So I think to come up to that level, then you are liberated because you are not carried away by others' pulls, reins. Anything can pull, but you are not, because you don't take that mental stress. So therefore, the Muji is telling that stress and frustration can't live without the mind. But the mind can live without the frustration and the tension. So believe it. Human mind is such a liberated one, it can live without frustration and without tension. Then if someone is coming and complaining, he says, please, when you are leaving, keep here your tension and the frustration, please leave. No, they always take it with them. But their identity is always with the frustration, identity is with the tension. And they are talking about the nasty, destructive thing. But they never entertain here, now I am. Just simple, just being, mere bare attention, they consider it as a Montessori. So Suzuki, writing the Zen mind, beginner's mind, he says, always try to be a beginner's mind. So no one can pick you, no one can take you for a ride, because you openness. So this is my remarks, so I think it is time to stop the discussion. So that means next day we will start with the stanza number 7. Yeah. Thank you very much for the participation. So we will wind up the discussion. Kamami kamitabbang. Swapatvita.